just going to come out and tell the truth.
Yeah, give you an inch, it'll take 3 hours. I've seen your work, Gary. You were inspiring to a lot of people. Gary will do that. Has anybody lives in Canada, incidentally? Gary is now on a healing arts kick, and he's doing a very good job of it. He is helping an awful lot of people overcome their real problems and handicap. And he's doing it in Vegas, and I don't suppose he wants to hire a room, but when he gets back to Canada, anybody who lives near the borders or want to fly up there, Gary does classes in extended versions of what he was doing the other night, which have been most beneficial. When you can help those Canadians and you get them to show some emotion, you've really done something. All right, here's the subject that stands between a lot of us and profiting. It stood between me for a long time. My wife sitting back there, I'd go in and say, boy, 63% today. 7 out of 9 today, honey, this and that. And she said, well, finally, she timidly said, well, honey, where's the money? How much money did you make? I said, well, $26. How long were you gone? 4 days. You know, I had to get a big thing, and I take somebody out to for a $138 dinner, which back in 75 was a lot of dinner. And then I read Huey Moll talking about money management. And strangely enough, I did exactly what most of you did. I said, well, I'm going to start that next week. So the day I was supposed to start it, I look at the forum and I say, oh, this doesn't look like a particularly good day. I don't think I want to, you know, do that, Kelly, today. I'll start tomorrow. And I continue to bring home $26, $30, $50 after every 4 days because of just stinking money management when I was doing always in excess of 60% winners, even then. And then one day I finally did it. And folks, once you start, once you get the discipline, it becomes a matter of pride to keep it. It's no longer difficult. It's that first couple of days that's tough. I think he's given a wonderful money management presentation at past seminars, always with that pessimistic notation that through the years, maybe 3 or 4 people have followed it. So I said to Dick, I don't want to hear what it is, but this time come up with a totally new money management approach that everybody will be so inspired by that they will begin practicing it immediately. Because that's what it takes, practicing it starting today, not promising, and not doing it. So instead of getting to a presentation which is valid and always has been, but nobody will follow, here's something that I'm going to sit and listen to with as much enthusiasm as you, because I've never heard it. The man of surprises, Mr. Dick Schmidt.
Yeah, it was a surprise to me, too. Let me see if this gets pointed at my face here. Howard called me a month ago or so and said, do something new in money management. Well, the whole thrust of my money management presentation is that there is nothing new in money management. Money management is a perfectible art, a science, if you will. You can do money management right. There's no right handicapping method, but there is a right money management method. And he said, oh, well, throw that all out and do something new. Okay, I have to agree, because my old money management presentation was, how many of you have seen my old money management stuff? You know, $200, yeah, how many of you have done it? That's what I thought. Yeah, one hand, and he didn't even need it. The problem is, it's right, it's correct, it's elegant, it's beautiful, it works, and no one does it. And therefore, it's a failure. You know, if you have the, you know, the great American novel that never gets published is not a great book. The Great American Money Management Theory that never gets used is not a great American money management theory. So, just to start you off here, I bought a book yesterday when I was over at the Gamblers Book Club called Search for Winning Horses, and I was reading it last night. And this man has captured the essence of losing very nicely. And it's an excellent book. I recommend it to anyone. And I want you to hear this, because this is what I think this is going to strike a chord. And it'll take a minute or so to read, but just bear with me. The pari-mutuel system, uniquely among the forms of public gambling, rewards judgment. Still, it is merely glib to say the best horse players win because they have the best judgment. It is something else to describe how they arrive at a better judgment. The basis of a horse player's judgment is handicapping, a craft halfway between art and science. Some experts on racing write as if handicapping alone makes winners. This sadly misleads the unwary. In later chapters, I will try to demonstrate why qualities of character and personal discipline are just as important. And the ultimate secret is to make probabilities work for you. A player arrives at the track full of hope and with an opinion on horses in the 6th, 8th, and 9th races. To give himself a good running start, he buys half a dozen tickets on the daily double in the first two races, though he likes nothing in particular in either of those races. His horses finish off the board, and he tears up those tickets. Somewhat irritated, he passes the third and fourth races, and rightly too. In the fifth race, he sees a horse he had not thought of the night before. It stands at 3-1. He hears a rumor that the stable likes the horse. A good player must be able to adjust, he tells himself. He tries to repair the damage of the daily double. The horse runs an unenterprising fourth. Our player is now thoroughly depressed. In the sixth race, he encounters the first horse he really liked coming to the track. In a flurry of betting in the first 10 minutes, the horse is bet down to even money. Our man, gun-shy now, stays off. The horse actually closes at 3-2 and wins, and was probably worth the price, the bettor concludes sadly, after the race. Thoroughly annoyed, he bets $50, a large bet for him, on the horse he liked in the 8th race. And this time he does finally have a winner. Everyone at the park, it seemed, liked the horse too, and it went off at 4-5. He cashes his ticket and finds himself still a little behind for the day. The horse he liked in the 9th and final race is the morning line favorite. He assumes it too will be bet down to even money or less. He has had enough and goes home without betting, a slight loser for the day. His selection for the last race, which he passed, does go off favorite, but at a startlingly good price of 5-2, and wins by a length and a half. Does this incident have any ring of truth? I read this because so often I think we need to validate our own conceptions with other people. We have to say that this is a universal problem. And if I just get up here and parrot the Perko party line about money management, you can sort of shine it on and say, well, Schmidt's just saying what Howard tells him to say, you know, hand puppet. This is a universal problem among all horse players. And it's in other books. And if you talk to people at the track, you'll see this in action. And most of you participate in this kind of wagering. You go out intending to bet a horse in the 4th and the 6th, and by the time the 4th runs around, your bankroll is depleted and you chicken out. You say, well, gee, I'm down $30, I'm just going to bet 50 on the horse, I'll only bet 20. This kind of playing without a plan is playing. It really is. Most of you in here, I know, have at least some sort of professional aspirations. You want to play this game. You want to use pari-mutuel investing as a vehicle for making a living. Maybe not 100% of your living, but you'd like to drive an income from the track in the thousands. You'd like to make a lot of money out there. And the fact is, I proved to myself in the last year, for instance, it is perfectly possible. Remember Andy Byers, $50,000 a year at the races? I beat him out. Yo! What it takes to play at a professional level is simple. And I'm going to give you the secret to it right now. I want you all take out your pens, take out your papers, write this down. This is really important, guys. This is it. Everyone get ready. Okay, you ready for the secret to success at the races? Write this down. Buy a notebook. That's it. Well, one corollary. Write down in the notebook every bet you make for the rest of your life. Forever. Every bet. That's it. It's so simple. It's so easy. Anyone can do it. But that's the difference between professional and gifted amateur. I've mentioned in the past that I've been to the track with all sorts of top professionals. People who really make a living at the track. And without exception, they are record keepers. And yet, in casual play, sitting next to people, and I sit next to hundreds of people every year, I never see anyone keeping records. Never. It just doesn't seem to happen. And therefore, record keeping seems to be the act that defines the professional. Now, just like if you want to be a professional athlete, many professional athletes, you know, that don't practice, don't work out. The answer, zero. They all do. It is one of the things that defines the professional athlete. The ability to work very, very, very hard. For the professional horse player, you don't have to work so very hard. What you have to do is keep records. Now, I've presented it in the past. It's in the book, Pace Makes the Race, where we start with a bankroll and run it up in a methodical manner. And I've never really understood why people resist this so much. I guess it's because it's just a little boring and a little... Occasionally they have to write down a loss. And particularly if you were losing overall, it's kind of painful. But it is something that you should get in the habit of doing, because this is the essence of professional play. And right now, let's face it, you know if you're winning or losing. You may not know exactly how much, but you know. You really do. And by writing it down, it'll just sort of fix it in your mind. And I don't think it's going to be all that painful. For those of you who've never heard it, you start with $200, bet 5%, double it. Bet 7.5%, double it again. Bet 10%, stay there for the rest of your life till you reach your comfort level. Very simple, very easy. Easy to do. When you have a large profit, you can start some new banks for Place or for Exactus. How many of you folks like to play Exactus? Yeah, how many of you win as much on your Exactus as you do on the wins? And why are you playing Exactus? This is probably the most common problem among money management that I see here, is the fact that people are scattered in their approach. They go out and they say, well, I can't really decide between these two horses and this one, so I'll box all three. And sure enough, one of their horses wins. And some other outsider runs second, and they lose it all. If you can get it down to three horses, you should hit 66% with a half pin. Instead, you're hitting zero. You're throwing money away. The professional can't handle that. You can't do that. Throwing money down on the ground just doesn't work, because this is your livelihood. Any more than a lawyer can forget to write down his billable hours, a doctor can afford to make house calls and say, I'll bill him maybe next week and forget about it. You just can't run a business that way.
And until you start treating your handicapping like a business, it's not going to work. It's going to be a game you play. It's going to be a recreation. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a hobby. But it's not going to be your living. It's not going to be your job. And this is a mindset that you have to take. This is something that you have to accept as part of the deal. The fact that racing is going to become a little less fun and a lot more profitable. Almost all of you, without exception in this room, have the handicapping skills necessary to make a living at the track. Right now, without learning anything more. Some of you are beginners, I know, and you're going to have to practice for a year. But within a year's time, all of you can be professionals. Each and every one of you. And it's not a matter of buying a new program. It's not a matter of reading a book. It's not a matter of anything other than mindset. Anything other than telling yourself, I am a professional. I'm going to act like a professional. I'm going to treat my profession with dignity. And I'm going to do all those actions that define professional play. I'm going to bet logically. I'm going to do my work ahead of time. I'm not going to scramble. I've heard half a dozen times people say, well, I got to the race book late. I only had 2 minutes to work the third. I only had 4 minutes since I've been here. I've heard that phrase over and over again. I didn't quite get there on time. But I never heard anyone say, so I just watched the race. No, they all bet them. With 2 minutes. That's scrambling. That's not how a professional acts. That's not how... in any profession you don't do that. You're not showing any respect for your chosen vocation. You're throwing money away, and you're acting as though it really doesn't matter, because this really isn't very serious stuff. This is a game that I play with myself and with some other people. I don't need this. I have my real job. And yet, if you treated your real job like you treat handicapping, pretty soon you wouldn't have a real job anymore. So ask yourself some of these questions and try to picture yourself performing like a professional, on a professional level. Another problem that an awful lot of people have, how many of you like to go to the track with your buddies and have a beer? No one? No one goes to the track with friends?
And has a beer,
whatever. Most people, how many of you would like to go to a brain surgeon that brought in a couple friends that, his next door neighbor had a brewski while he was stuck on your head? No, that's not how good. You can just see him carving away there. Hey, how about that barbecue? Yeah. That's not how professional acts, and that's not how any of us want to be treated. So we have to ask ourselves, are we treating ourselves like a professional? Are we treating our endeavor like a professional? Now, is there anyone in here who doesn't want to be a pro? No one? You all want to make money. So, if there is, that's great. Go to the races, have fun, break even. But if you want to be a professional, learn to treat your chosen vocation like a professional. Now, about a year ago, in this very city, Michael Pozzola and I taught a master's class, and I introduced a money management plan to those people. There's half a dozen of them here in the audience. Some of them were quite shocked to find out that I didn't use the money management plan that I had been advocating in all these seminars. My $200 pyramid at 10%, I don't do that, and haven't for a couple of years. And they said, oh, we are aghast. You have lied to us, Dick. And I said, yes, I have. But I did it for your own good. That's why everyone lies to you, right? For your own good. Okay. I presented it to this class as an experiment because I wanted to see if this was something that perhaps I could do and they couldn't. Maybe it's like the matchup. The real full-blown, honest-to-God
three-finger matchup that Jim Bradshaw does is not particularly teachable. He does it wonderfully. And most of the rest of us flounder. Maybe this is something that I could do. Turned out it wasn't. Turned out it was something that they could do too. So I'm going to present it to you in hopes that perhaps this will get you going. Yes, you still must buy a notebook. Yes, you still must write down every bet. I'm sorry, the painful stuff lingers on and on and on. Yes, you must even once in a while think about what you're doing at the race. But what I urged the people in the master's class to do was to, after we finished the handicapping of each race, we set it aside, and when we finished the handicapping of the day's card, we would then go back and handicap the card as though it were a race. In other words, this is a nine-horse race, and we're simply going to assign probabilities to this race. We're going to say the one race, the one horse, if you will, the first thing that we're looking at here, the first race. The 25% race. I mean, I like it, but it's not great. It's a 25% probability. The two is a maiden race for a first-time starter. That's a zero probability. The third race, aha, here's a horse that's really looking good, the 75% race. And so I would make them go through and assign probabilities to this race. And based on these probabilities of how they felt about the race, of how they felt that this was a race I really understand. I have this race by the little teeny foot here, and I'm holding on. The stronger they felt about the race, the more money they felt on, bet on the race. Up to a certain given percentage. This is a kind of betting that I've heard other professionals talk about. Prime bets. Well, Tom Brohammer and Andy Beyer talk about a prime bet. This is a bet that is absolute, the max. For Tom Brohammer, his prime bet's $250,000. For others, it's a little less. Hi, Tommy. He's making some big plays now. For Andy Beyer, it's, you know, hey, I'll bet my life. So, a prime bet. And I'm going to add, I'll draw you a little diagram here. People like little diagrams. Prime bet. This is a 100%. It's 15% a bank. Now you're going to find, if you're finding, you know, you handicap the day's card, you say, well, let's say you've got seven races here, six of them are 100%. No, they're not. One or two a week. That's all. You only find a few 100%. This is when, in phase one trials, when you have a horse with a 6, 7, 8 point advantage. This is when you have one with all ones, just solid. You look at the race, and every pace line is easy. After a while, when you've done enough races, you just sort of get a feel when you're done with the race as to whether, boy, did I have to go back on this horse and guess on this one? That's not a 100% race. Even if those horses are on the bottom, even if you have a solid favorite here, or a solid horse here that you think is just great, if the others you're guessing on, I'm talking about a race in which everything lines up, that's a 100% race. And if you're encountering more than a few a week, two or three a week, certainly you won't find one every day. You're finding too many, and you need to cut back, because 15% of banks is incredibly bold. That's really, really, really very, very bold. And if you make that bet very often and you lose it, your bank is going to just be destroyed. You know, two or three of these losers and you've lost, you know, three of these losers and you've lost almost half your bank. That's very serious stuff, so be very cautious awarding 100%. And after that, you're sort of on your own. I sort of advocated 75, 60, 50, 40, 25, 10, and of course the other popular, 0. Basically, if you look at a race, you think it's a race. It's not a great race, not a bad race, it's just a race. That should be a 50, which means you're going to bet 7.5% of your bank on it. You're going to bet 50% of the max. Am I in trouble with you, Joe?
Oh, no problem. I'll get it.
I'll take care
of it. We're ready.
No. All my words of wisdom must be enduring on tape here. Here we go. Hey. Okay, a 50% bank is just that. 50 is half of your 100% bet. A 10% bet is 1.5% of your bank. Now, what we're trying to do here is develop an instinct, a judgment, a feeling, however you want to put it, as to how well you understand the race. And we're also going to assume that the better you understand the race, the better you feel about a race, the more likely you are to win it. That's the whole basis of this kind of a betting scheme. If you don't have those feelings, such as our esteemed leader, Dr. Tarr,